Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Dual Screens podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, back together again, the tag team, the dynamic duo is here. He's Andy Asimakis. How you doing, bud?
I had an idea. When we launch our indie game business.
Yes.
The ideas flow every day, but I think I hit it today.
It's because of the crack.
Of course.
Okay.
Now, I think I would say, like, I'd have to take crack for this idea, but I don't.
So okay. Okay. Like, so what's the idea? Get with it. Come on.
So like today's game.
Today's game. Yep.
It like takes place inside of a living thing.
Uh-huh.
Our game. One of us is inside the other.
Like Osmosis Jones?
Ooh, well, you're not that young. You remember this other movie? That guy, Martin Short, and they shrunk down inside of him.
Oh.
Is it called Inner Space?
I don't know. Wow, this has gone off the rails very quickly. Joining us this week, ladies and gentlemen, is Mark Radossi.
Crack involved.
Developer of Moonlight Pulse, a 2D Metroidvania game that takes place inside of a giant turtle. What's up, Mark? How you doing, man?
Hey, it's going fine, you guys. Thanks for having me on here.
Yeah, man. Welcome.
More PAX East friends are back.
Yes, we love the follow-up interviews from PAX East because everybody gets to like digest it and we get to be like, oh yeah, I remember that game. That game was dope. Anyway, Mark, welcome to the Dual Screens podcast. Listeners, welcome to the Dual Screens podcast. The show posts each and every week for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home Podbean. And of course, you could watch the video version of the podcast on youtube.com/DualScreensTV. And if you want to support us on Patreon, it's very simple. Go to patreon.com/dualscreens, just like our Patreon producer Colton the Apprentice Nestler, who I think just got himself a Dual Screens email, Andy.
Yes.
Like soon.
By the time this goes live, he'll have an email.
Wow. Look at that. He's part of the team officially.
I gotta write that down on my list of things.
Write it down on a list of things. Speaking of a list of things, Andy, do you have a ceremonial lead off question of the show, because we're going to dive right into this.
I do. And I think this may actually unlock good conversation, which the lead off question doesn't really do. I feel for like
usually
80%
it's
of
usually
the time.
It's a sandbag that you just tie to our guests' ankles and send them off seaworthy. Yeah. So, yeah, let's see how this goes.
Questions, all of his life choices. Mark, you're coming up on a very special anniversary. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but I know. Because I Twitter stalked you today a little bit.
Oh, okay.
A wee bit.
What's the anniversary?
Last year you quit your job and you started this amazing little indie game.
Oh, yes.
Company,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Seafloor Games.
Yep.
How can I do that? I want to quit my job and make games. what do I need to know to do that?
Well, first thing you need is a lot of money. That's what you need.
Well, excuse me, Mr. Moneybags.
Okay.
That's the reality of the situation. You need savings and a bit of a trust fund and stuff. I know not everyone likes that, but I wouldn't have had the balls to do that otherwise. So I was very fortunate to have like a net supporting me.
Sure.
How that happened was I was working at my job, and the job was great, everything was going by fine, but there was one caveat that I wasn't like actually allowed to work on my own games off hours, and I didn't like having that kind of, you know, that feeling that I wasn't supposed to be doing this. And I was just thinking about it and starting my own company, doing game development on my own. That was always something I wanted to try, and I was just thinking like this would be the best time to try it. I had experience, and I felt like this would be the time to do it. I don't have like a family or a house to take care of or anything, so I'm just, hey, let's try it out, see what happens. So
congratulations.
Last year stopped that and formed a company, and still doing that.
Was like the fear that you would be like burnt out working after hours on your own stuff, that you would lose focus or the quality would suffer on your day job? Or it was, because that's a really interesting thing, because a lot of devs we speak to, they're like encouraged to do stuff outside of what they do on their day job, and they like cross collaborate and work on side projects and launch them on their own.
Yeah, that not here.
That's really wild.
Yeah, it's just a non-compete clause. You're not supposed to do that. Gotcha. And as far as like priority with the jobs and all, when I first started that job, like about 3 years before I quit, it was actually just right after like another like really bad job. Like I was actually had really terrible performance at previous jobs. I wasn't able to hold a job for more than like a year. I wasn't happy with what I was doing. So when I started the new one, I was like, I really gotta, you know, be focused on this 100% and make sure like I actually do it right. So that wasn't an issue. Like I stayed there for 3 years, you know, got promotion while there. So like I did a good job, made sure that was like my main priority, and I was able to leave on good terms too. Mm-hmm. So like that was just like a big like I don't know, a significant accomplishment, something like that I had messed up in the past and want to fix. So I was able to do that and I was happy about it.
Yeah, you got to do this whole thing on your terms, which I think is, you know, really important. It wasn't out of necessity. It wasn't an accident. It was something that you decided, this is what I'm going to do. Now's the time to do it. And you seem to have jumped off on the right foot. And the game is awesome from what we've seen so far. So let's focus a little bit on Moonlight Pulse. For those who don't know what it is, why don't you give the little elevator pitch, as it were, so people can be a little bit more familiar about what we're going to be talking about for the next 40 or so minutes.
Sure. Yeah. So Moonlight Pulse, it's a seamless Metroidvania where you switch between distinct characters on the fly and you explore a plant-sized turtle. The premise is that these otherworldly parasites have invaded, and you have to find new team members, learn new abilities, team up and fight them back, fight against them and increase the turtle's vitality. It's your home, you know, I gotta make it healthy, that kind of thing.
How does the swapping between characters kind of change up the Metroidvania formula? Because it sounds pretty unique.
Mm-hmm. So each character you get, like the characters are something you find like over the course of the game, so it's kind of similar to abilities you get in Metroidvanias. Okay. And then those characters will also learn abilities, so you get a new abilities that way. And when you switch between them, it's like switching between different styles of gameplay. So the first character, Silex, he's like a short range, up close, deals a lot of damage type of fighter. And then like the second guy you get, Laguna, he shoots like water bullets at long range, but it does less damage. So based on like the type of enemies you're fighting or the situation, you have to switch between characters and make best use of that. And each of the characters also have like different abilities used for traversal. So you're able to mix and match like what you do in order to like explore the environment more.
Does the turtle know that you're like in it doing stuff?
It does not. So it's kind of like the characters are like microscopic to the turtle. Mm-hmm. So you don't really like, it doesn't really consider like think about you that much. Mm. And the it's kind of like turtles like they're god or like otherworldly being, so like they can't like comprehend what they're thinking or saying or anything like that. There was actually an idea that the turtle is going to be like its own character that would like eventually realize that all the inhabitants were doing stuff, but
were at war in his gut.
Yeah, but that got left on the cutting room floor. It was there was like some set pieces involved with it that were too ambitious, that were cut out, and we felt like it didn't really fit the theme anyway. We thought it'd be cooler if there was like this separation between like what the turtle was doing, what the inhabitants were doing. So it's like it's like a force of nature in a way, like you can't just control the weather, you know. Yeah. like that kind of thing.
That'd make for a fun like time attack or a speed run thing. Like before the turtle farts, you have to like finish a level or something. Like get a game over screen.
Like at the end, it zooms back and it's just like this exasperated dad being like, and that's why turtles get diarrhea. Like, I don't know. It's like, it's because there's a constant intergalactic battle and all these tiny little organisms are always fighting for supremacy, and eventually the water always wins.
That's why I feel most days. Goddamn, getting old sucks.
The world, the map that you're actually exploring, does it have organic functions that you would be able to recognize, or is it on such a small scale that it just looks like a world?
No, you'd be able to recognize a bunch of the places. We have places like the lungs, esophagus, stomach. I think only the esophagus was in the demo, though. Like, the entire surface is like the shell of the turtle. And I think the biggest feature is probably the blood vessels that connect all the areas. So the blood vessels are giant. You're actually able to like swim in them. They go in one way, they branch off, but some of the blood vessels are blocked off by these like eye leech parasites. So a big part of the game is finding a way around to like destroy those parasites, which opened up new areas, and then you have a new place to explore.
Did you have to like research the anatomy of a turtle?
I kind of did, actually. It's like, you're not gonna use the game as like, you know, a biological reference or anything.
Dang.
But like, I did find like a anatomy cross section of the turtle, and like that kind of is roughly how the map looks. So if you like finish the game and look at the map and like see where, you know, the various organs are and compare it to like an actual turtle, it would like roughly match up. Or like the sizes and everything are, you know, totally out of sync and whatever, but like it's still like generally where the organs would be.
I love the juxtaposition, Andy, of this chaotic fight that you're constantly struggling and exploring this mystical world, and then this like mad chill turtle just kind of floating around.
There should be like a turtle cam.
Okay.
Like the turtle, I'm listening. Just legit doing nothing. Like cut during a boss fight, the turtle like fast asleep. Or like reading the paper or some shit. Like the most benign, like mundane shit. While like the struggle for its well-being is happening inside its own body.
Freaking parasites. It's bastards.
You know, on that note, what is it about a giant or those turtles that lend themselves to this kind of a story? Like, I feel, Steven, you got a code for a game recently with a similar kind of idea. It's giant turtle.
Yes, world turtles.
And things on it. And
you,
like,
you build a civilization on the back of a planetary sized turtle.
Yeah. Was that Wandering Village? I remember seeing that
patch. No.
That's a different game, but still yes, a similar idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But like the idea
it's very
like
similar,
of a turtle, like it's come across many times in storytelling, but a giant turtle and there's stuff happening on it.
So
I don't get it. Like, why is that like the go-to?
So I think there's like a mythology thing about that that's like sort of subtly ingrained into pop culture. But the thing is, originally, like at the very, very beginning, like during the ideas stage, like there wasn't like that, the whole living turtle thing, that was going to be like a plot twist or a surprise. I always had this idea of like, oh, what if you had like an adventure game and at the end it turned out the whole planet was alive and stuff? Wouldn't that be cool? But like I was thinking about it and like, you know what? It would be cool if like, you know, you could like visit, you know, like the lungs and like the stomach and like swim in blood vessels and do all these cool like set piece things you aren't really normally able to do in an adventure game. So like these would be like kind of cool things you could do, but you wouldn't be able to do that if this was like a end game plot twist, right? Because that would ruin the surprise. Obviously it's alive. So instead of making that the plot twist, it's now the premise of the game. Like, no, you're exploring living thing. Here are the things you go to. And I guess like turtle was just like, I don't know, just seemed like a natural fit, I suppose.
I'm gonna give you a plot twist idea for a
here we go
right now. You ready?
Write it down, Mark.
They're always turning the gears. Right. Yeah. In the end, the turtle sneezes, right?
Oh boy.
And the main characters are expelled and they land on a different entity. And in your sequel, you're playing as a fresh set of characters, and the parasite, the enemy, are the heroes from part one.
The invasive species.
Yes.
You get into the eye goo of a raccoon, and the raccoon sucks in the heroes, and you have to fight inside the trash panda. Look at that. See, we're real creative over here at Dual Screen. This is why you, this is why you watch the show. It's for you know, artistic expression.
Speaking of creativity and creativity and crack. Was crack involved in the conception of this game, and obviously, where did the idea come from?
It was no. Are you asking where the idea came from, though?
Yeah, like, you know, it's a decision that someone makes that they sat down. So, you know, I want to make a game that you're inside of a turtle.
And well, you just kind of covered that, but
yeah.
Like, right, but like, you know, what was the cathartic, the defining moment that you're, this is what I'm doing. This is my game.
All right.
This is what I quit the job for.
So
where the trust fund's going, apparently.
So before Moonlight Pulse, I had made another Metroidvania called Vision Self Reset. Mm-hmm. And after that game was finished, I liked it. I'm proud of it, but I definitely thought there were some things I could have done better and things I could have improved on. So the beginning of Moonlight Pulse wasn't really a game. It was just like a bunch of scattered ideas on like ways I could improve as like a game developer and a programmer. Like, you know, I want to make the code better. I want to make like a better platforming system. I want to make a better save system. One thing I came up with was like, you know, I always want to make like a visual effect where like the screen could distort and like do all these like, you know, crazy space distortion things. And that space distortion idea actually formed into the game's final boss, which was one of the first things developed actually. So it's like kind of like a backwards way of doing it, and then like the kind of game just sort of blossomed from there. So it was like, I think like the blood vessels things was like modified of like this cool like tube thing I could make in the Unity editor, and that sort of became that. So it's like, it's not really a great way to form a game, just taking a bunch of scattered ideas and like putting them all together. And I actually think the game's weakest point is like its lack of focus sometimes. So it's like, there was never really like this, oh man, I gotta make this. I mm-hmm. need to make this kind of game, this premise. Not really. It was more just like, you know, how do all these things kind of work together? That kind of thing, really. So again, like the whole, you know, living planet thing, like that was just an old idea that I wanted to capitalize onto.
Did you, were you always a fan of the Metroidvania genre, or is it just because you had made one and you wanted to get better at it, or kind of a mix of both?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've always been a fan of it. I mean, that's why I made the first one. Right.
Okay.
So yeah, like I've liked Metroidvanias for a while. I think like the first Metroidvania I was like, I really liked, it was actually like kind of an obscure old school indie Metroidvania called An Untitled Story. Very good. I think it still holds up today. But like this Metroidvania came out in 2007, I think, was like something that like it was just like lo-fi enough to made me think like, hey, like I might be able to make something like this. I could probably do this. And I couldn't, at least not at the time, but eventually I was able to. And yeah, so like this Moonlight Pulse is like my second go at the Metroidvania thing, which is a challenge because, you know, Metroidvanias aren't exactly in short supply in the indie space. It feels like there's a new one coming out every week or something. So I'm trying hard to like make it stand out or shine in some way.
Do you think calling it a Metroidvania is like a good thing these days, like to have it as part of that conversation? Or I feel like it might almost at this point for developers like yourself to just be like, oh, look at this really cool game, and then people to decide whether or not it's a Metroidvania.
That's a good question. I think it would be better to call it one because like that's a good way to like easily get across what the game's about, what the gameplay's about. One way, like I've noticed that game developers like to describe their games as like it's X beats Y. It's Mario beats Pokemon or something. I don't know.
Sure.
But it's like that kind of thing is like a good way to get like players knowing like what the game's about at a glance. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely not a fan of, you know, X meets Y comparisons, because usually games are a lot more like intricate and involved.
They're not as reductive.
Yeah. But like I have to admit, like that's a really good way to get someone quickly interested or like understanding like what the gist of a game is. So I think Metroidvania lends that itself too. I've also noticed that there are games that don't really seem like they're Metroidvanias in the traditional sense, but like using that descriptor anyway. Like sometimes I've seen like roguelikes or like procedurally generated games use the Metroidvania term. And I'm like, I'm not really sure that's quite what it is, but like, I don't know. I mean, like people on the internet love to have like these huge long form discussions on what a Metroidvania is and isn't. And like, I don't really care, to be honest. Like if the game's good, then it's good. You know, if it's not, right. It's not like that's what's important. Right. It's not really like the strict definition of Metroidvania. Like that's not what I'm thinking about when I'm making Moonlight Pulse. I just want to try to make a good game.
Yeah. Speaking as a frequent connoisseur of Metroidvania games, for me, that was what made me want to like book some time with you and check out your game. Cause I know already what to expect kind of. And it's like, okay, I get it. I'm in the door. You have my attention. Now show me what you're doing with this genre.
Now, Andy, that's can I ask you a question?
No, yeah, sure.
This could be a good for discussion. Mm-hmm. When you see somebody's making a Metroidvania, are you looking for an experience to be what you expect? Or are you looking for an experience that's different than what you expect?
That is a really great question. I think it could go either way. It's because I know it's not going to be my favorites, the ones that I go to, that, you know, the Symphony of the Nights, Super Metroids. Like, I know what those games are, and I know what they did to define the genre. It's how this person is taking that gameplay style. I guess it's more column B then. Like, what are they bringing to the table that's fun, that's not something that's been done a million times before? Like, and what's their take on Metroidvania?
Yeah. What about you, Mark?
I like to say that, you know, I'm looking for something different. Like, I'm looking for like something new and original to play, so like I get something new out of a game when I play it. Is that like actually true though? Like, based on my play history, I don't know, but I guess that's what I'd like to think anyway.
Sure.
I do know, like, when I try out some new Metroidvanias that other developers are doing, I always get a little disappointed when I find the game is like, it's like Hollow Knight, but like not as like expansive or something. And I'm like, I know a lot of people like Hollow Knight a lot, but I think like that kind of thing is like a good, you can have like a, there's potential to like grow upon that, add your own ideas or add mechanics. And when people don't take that like opportunity, I do get a little disappointed, I guess.
For me, like Metroidvania isn't necessarily a genre I like. I'm not going to pick a game because it's a Metroidvania. For me, it's always the world and characters that catch me the most, and obviously the moment to moment gameplay. Like, I look at the Metroidvania skeletal structure as it's how you get from beginning to end of the game. It's the journey. And that's fine. That could be Metroidvania, it could be side scroller beat 'em up, it could be whatever. But if the characters are cool, the story's intriguing, the world that you're in is unique enough, and the way you're fighting enemies is fun and unique, for example, swapping between characters and having different play styles and being able to switch it up, that's what intrigues me into a genre that is oversaturated, where if you could look at a trailer and it, one's 8-bit, one's 16-bit, one's hand-drawn, one is cel-shaded, one is whatever, but all the characters are doing the same thing, jump with this, you know, slam down or shoot the powerful thing and it opens the thing and they go through, like, there's no substance there for me. I want to see character. I want to see, and I don't mean just like a person character. I mean, like, I want to see the game's character. Come out, and that really goes for any genre. Right now, one of the saturated genre that's been coming up is the enemy hell, the vampire survivors genre, right? Those are all over the place. Some of them are just terrible. They're just, you know, let's
but they're cheap and
yeah they're $2 and, whatever yeah. But now what's standing out to me is what world are you putting these in? How are you taking that formula and making it visually and aesthetically pleasing, but also making it so that it's not a literal carbon copy of the powers and the abilities or whatever, the way you level up that you get in this other thing. And I think they're going to have a much harder time than the Metroidvanias, which have been coming out since, 1990 or 1989.
Castlevania 2. When did that game first come out?
88?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. But either way, I think they're going to have a much harder time having that kind of legs because of that.
Yeah, as long as you don't it doesn't feel like ChatGPT built your game. It just takes ideas of what a Metroidvania is supposed to be. I think that's where you start to lose me, because I've played a bunch where you can see this is clearly this game's double jump, or this game's mist and bat form, and I've seen all these abilities before. I get it. That's where you start to lose me. But yeah, as long as there's heart and soul, 9 Years of Shadows, a recent amazing Metroidvania, they did their abilities through suit swapping, which is pretty neat. And you could hug a teddy bear to get health back. It's I'm in. That's awesome.
That whole,
that's heart
the whole
and soul.
Teddy bear situation is very unique. It's a very unique way of balancing power and health and stuff like that, outside of just picking up health drops and whatever.
Wall chicken.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, does Moonlight Pulse have wall chicken?
You're inside a giant. There's meat all around you. Can you just eat the walls to get health back?
No, unfortunately not.
That's kind of like pollution, right? Kind of. It's like destroying your earth.
Yeah, it's sort of like, or deforestation, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't want that, Andy. Mm-hmm. See? It's a game with a message, Andy.
Yeah, but if the houses were edible, I'd eat them.
Houses, yes, but I mean, would you just go walking around your office just eating couches?
And if they're made of
cubicles?
If they were made of cake or
A turtle's purpose is not to be your food, Andy.
I'd be the first person in that old witch's oven. Just go right in. Yeah, I'll eat it. Yeah. Yeah. Give me the candy. I'll go in the oven. I'll eat while I'm burning alive.
Jeez.
Good Lord.
You are a raccoon.
I am.
Do you identify
as a garbage person?
Not identify as. That's not what I mean. I mean, do you relate to this world, this turtle, this universal turtle in any way, Mark? Because you're pretty chill. You give me turtle vibes.
Are you the god turtle?
Are you the turtle?
Am I the turtle? I would say no. The turtle doesn't really have much of a character in this game. I will say that Moonlight Pulse was my first real attempt at having characters with personality and like a real story in the game. And that was a challenge because that's not something I've ever done before. It's and I don't read books really. I'm not a writer, so this was a challenge. And I find that because of that, and because I found it pretty difficult to imagine a character with unique personality and figure out what they'd say, I think a lot of characters just ended up having some facet of my own personality in a way. Cause
sure.
That's the dialogue that I'm writing. Cause I can't I can't role play as someone else. That's some other character and what they say. So I guess a lot of the characters have some part of my personality, I suppose. I don't know. Maybe, 5-10 years, I'll come back, play this game after I've forgotten about it, and be like, oh, so that's what I was like back then. I don't know.
You speak about the story and writing. I have a question.
Sure.
I was trying my damnedest to link or to connect the title of the game to what's going on in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't understand or see how would this game.
Okay.
Because if I said this game was called Moonlight Pulse,
should we try and guess?
The game is about.
You're not going to be able to guess. not the Moonlight part anyway. The Pulse. You probably
pulse, like, I kind of get.
Yeah, like Pulse is like the heartbeat pulse. That's where it
yes.
came from.
Yes.
So where did Moonlight come from? Okay, so the game, I originally codenamed it Moonlight because when I first started making the game, I was at the job that didn't let me make the game. So the code name Moonlight came from the fact that I was moonlighting. I was just really paranoid about
that's
it.
That's good.
So that's where I was codenamed. And then when it came to actually name the game for real, I was speaking with the art team, and none of us could come up with a better name. So it was just Moonlight plus whatever. Moonlight Pulse. There we go. And that's it.
That's
and we picked it because when we put it in Google, we couldn't find any other matches. It wasn't taken or anything. So there we go. At the time.
While
anyway.
While we're on the topic, where did Seafloor Games come from? Mm. Seafloor is...
So Seafloor was another... kind of old idea where, like, if I was ever going to make a game company, I want it to be called Seafloor, because for one, wasn't taken. That's important.
Mm-hmm. Very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not when choosing our name, apparently, because fuck that.
You did it. No, full knowing that someone else had it.
Yeah.
Go on, Mark.
With Seafloor, I like that it kind of gives the image of like, descending into the unknown and exploring like uncharted territory. You're like the bottom of an ocean. Sure. And who knows, maybe when you're exploring the depths, you can come across a hidden gem, which is what I want people to think the game is like. I will say I regret the name a little bit, because I've noticed whenever I say Seafloor out loud, people think I'm saying C4, as in like the bomb, the grenade.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this has been so amazingly consistent. I say C4, it's like, oh, C4, like the grenade. It's like, why does your mind go to that? Like, what part of me, the game, the team, makes you think C4? No, it's Seafloor. And then they're like, oh, that makes a lot more sense. I'm like, yeah. At least when it's paired with the logo, it makes a lot more sense. People get it quickly, but oh well. Guess I'm stuck with that for now.
It's like when I used to buy game magazines, and they would say that's really fast, and it sounds like game magazines.
Oh,
which I also used to buy, as
which you were also buying. Yeah.
I'm just buying my game magazines. Okay, son, have fun with that.
Okay, I think.
Why is he going in the bathroom to read Game Pro? EGM.
BDM. What? What are you saying? What the hell are you saying? I have the your trailer going on right now, and I just talk a little bit about these characters.
Sure. All right. So, Silex, the first guy, he's like the veteran. Like, he know, like, he's been doing this job for a while. He's a so-called curative agent, which is like the squad of people that are protecting the turtle named Orosk. And so like these curatives, like Silex, he's been doing this for a while. He's confident, kind of brash. And the second guy, Laguna, he's like kind of the complete opposite. He's like timid, scared, still wants to help though, but like he's been kind of sheltered, so he doesn't know a lot about how the turtle and Oros work. So he's kind of like the player's lens into the world. So like, as Silex introduces Laguna to the plaza and all the rest of the characters, like the players getting introduced at the same time. So like those two characters were actually directly based on Snake and Raiden from Metal Gear Solid 2, where Silex is Snake and Laguna is Raiden. It's not quite the same. Not the like the characterization doesn't quite line up, but that was where the inspiration came from. The other two characters. Charlotte, I think she's briefly shown the trailer. She uses like an electric whip.
Yeah.
And her deal was like again, they're not like based on characters, so they were kind of harder to pin down. She's like, didn't really want to be a curative, but had to by force because no one else was like doing anything about the parasites that were invading her village. And Clyde, who I don't think is in the trailer at all, but he is in the game's logo. The fourth character, he's like an engineer type guy who's mm-hmm. scared of parasites, but is like able to build like a mech suit eventually, and then he joins the fight kind of later on in the game. So that would be the whole team. I don't really consider that a spoiler since it's in the logo. So
sure,
those are the four characters that you get to play as.
And how do they become these defenders? Like, is it a thing that just, like you mentioned, one character just does it because out of necessity, but like, is it like, is it an order? You know, like, are you called to the order of
not really. It's sort of like that. There's like a head boss person named Christy, like the chief, really. Yeah. But she like kind of like tells, like gives you hints on where to go, but like that's about it. There isn't like a strict order hierarchy, that kind of thing. I did like intentionally make it so that there wasn't like too many like complex like orders or institutions or anything like that in the game, just because of my own lack of experience for writing. I didn't want to make the world itself too complicated, so like I try to keep things simple, have like a simple plot, that kind of thing, just so like I can have everything make sense.
Do the inhabitants of this world understand that these four characters are essentially the only reason why they're alive?
Yeah, they understand it.
they're the Justice League of this turtle's body.
The thing is that like there have always been parasites invading the turtle, but like it's only recently that there started to be like a lot of them, and I was like really powerful, intelligent parasites that are kind of roaming the place now. So like that now is just more of a big deal. Like this is like you know, like the most exciting thing that happens in their lives, because like that's kind of something I've always been kind of annoyed with a lot of modern game storytelling, is like it's always like, man, there was like this big epic war that happened like 50 years ago. Now you get to look around and see what happened. And it's like, that's boring. Why didn't the game just actually be about that war? Like, why are we?
Because that's the prequel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I wanted this to be like, I wanted it to be that prequel. Like, something really cool happened here, and you get to play it. You get to play that cool thing that happens. So, yeah, it's like, again, like I wanted to have like some sort of, you know, interesting story with characters with like different personalities, but I also didn't want it to be complicated, like just because, well, for one, I'm not a very good writer. Like the whole thing is based around me not being able to write very well. So I just want to keep it simple, but also simple to understand and easy to, you know, like get excited for what's coming.
Limitations
next.
Breeds creativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I've been thinking during Mark's whole little talking there of a punny name for this team of characters, and I couldn't find one for Justice League that made sense, but I think I got one.
What you got?
The Avengers.
Avengers.
Because they're in the vein, I get it. Assume they're inside.
That's it. That's bad writing.
In case you wanted to know where the bar was, Mark, there it is, bud.
If you ever feel like you're not a good writer, mm-hmm. Timestamp on that, Steve.
39 minutes and
there
17
is.
Seconds.
There it is.
Speaking of time, before we get into rapid fire, Mark, I want you one more time, tell the listeners and the viewers why they should give Moonlight Pulse a chance when.
Sure. Yeah, Moonlight Pulse, it's a nifty upcoming Metroidvania where you get to switch between distinct characters and you explore a planet-sized turtle. It's coming out on Steam, hopefully early next year. And it'll be a Metroidvania experience that does things differently. You're going to hopefully enjoy it for its unique gameplay, style switching, and interesting setting. So
awesome. I wrote down a question that I want to
find. And if you think Mark is lying, there's a demo on Steam right now.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So go check it out.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I
should have mentioned. Are you a liar, Mark? Is that what we're saying here?
Would you believe me if I said I wasn't?
That you weren't? Oh.
Oh, wait a minute. Wow. All right, Mark.
Well, yeah, if you don't believe me, try out the demo.
Try it out. It's good stuff. It's dual screens approved. We love that at PAX East. It's a great game.
Ding! That was the sound of the approval.
They're really excited.
Now it's time, Mark, for us to get into a little rapid fire. This is where we're going to get to know you.
Oh boy.
And your deepest, darkest impulses.
All right.
We're going to start off with an easy question. Simple question. Okay. Is cereal a soup?
Is cereal a soup? I don't know the strict definition of soup, but I mean, I guess that makes sense, right? So, yeah, I'd say so.
I'm going to go with the food thing because we haven't asked this question, I feel, a very long time.
Very long.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Sure, why not? I mean, I've tried it recently. I don't think it's my favorite, but I thought it was fine. I don't get why people make such a big deal about it.
Here's an interesting question that I thought of while we were talking earlier. Do you have an inner monologue?
Inner monologue? I do talk to myself more than I should, perhaps. So yeah.
Can you hear yourself in your head? Like, do you hear a voice that could talk that, like, hey, don't touch that. What do I have to do today? All right. Yeah. I got to go pick up the thing.
Maybe not really. I think like, I mean, I guess I do. I mean, like, and instead of talking to myself in public places, I do have to stay silent. So yeah, I guess I do have a silent inner monologue that I hear.
Did you know that like 50% of the people don't have an inner monologue, Andy?
I can't imagine.
It's just bizarre to me.
I tend to like talk to myself out loud. Like I vocalize that inside voice.
You could just sit there and think and hear. Think,
yeah.
Like it's there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like talking to yourself, but in public where that would be weird. So you do it silently.
Right. There are some people that don't hear thoughts. Like they're not vocalized in their brains. It's so weird.
Now, what is it when you tell them to shut up? Is that a thing? If a lot of them are schizophrenia. There it is.
Go ahead, Andy. You're up.
Let's see. What do you think people notice the most about you?
About me as a person? Dang. I don't know. I guess like, all right. So when something I tell like a lot of my friends and closest family is that like close family and friends is like, you know, if I ever say or do something bad or out of line, like you need to tell me because I might not realize that I'm doing it and I don't want to like hurt or offend anyone. So I guess from that, what I think people think about me is like, oh man, Mark's doing something really weird and crazy, but I don't want to be rude. So I'm just not going to tell him. And I'm just like, oh no, you guys should probably speak up. or I'm just being paranoid. I don't know. that's just what came to mind when you asked me that.
Steve, if I do things that are inappropriate or rude,
I've told you.
You should not tell me. So I can keep hurting and offending people.
There we go. That's what I should start telling people.
Mark, society has either evolved or devolved to worship the volcano again. And we have to make a sacrifice to the volcano. It has to be something that you love. What are you sacrificing in the volcano in order for it not to erupt?
I have to sacrifice something I love to a volcano for it to not erupt. Do I
You throw it in there and no problem. A whole year of no volcano explosion. But it's your turn. It's your turn. Everyone else, you were.
I'll throw my laptop in right here that has all my stuff on it into the volcano. And that's okay because it's all backed up anyway. So I just have to get a new laptop.
But the volcano's a god and the volcano will know.
Oh, so I can't trick it. Okay.
It has a caveat, Mark. If it was going to be that easy, I'm going to throw this empty Red Bull because I love Red Bull.
I don't.
Oh, no, my Band-Aid collection. My charge. My precious.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I guess the backups, too. I mean, like.
Sure. Just throw the game, like Moonlight Pulse.
Yeah, see, the thing is, like that sting to lose all that work and stuff. I still have the experience from that. I can use it to build something else. So
the love would still remain in your heart, and that's what matters to the volcano.
This is posting on Monday, right, Steve?
Yeah.
So this joke is appropriate. Oh, no, my copy of Redfall. Okay.
Redfall.
Oh, my God. All right, let's see. What is something that you're terrible at, but you wish you could do well?
Art, easily. Because I can't remember if I mentioned this before, but like I didn't do any of the art for the game. That was that's an art team of really awesome skilled artists that are contributing to the game. And like I really wish I could do that. See, as a kid, I was like really dismissive towards art, just being like, oh, I'm like a programmer math guy, I don't need that dumb art. And I was just like the dumbest, stupidest mistake I could have made. It was just really mean, short-sighted, and now my punishment is just not being able to draw like at all. And I've tried, so I'm like, I just can't do it. I tried, like, it takes me a lot of work just to make like dinky placeholder art that I sent to the real artist. So I'm like, man, I wish I had more of a, you know, knack or at least an eye for it, and I just don't. So, yeah, really wish I was better at that.
They should have told you. They should have told you, Mark.
Mm-hmm. I bet they did. Yeah, I just didn't listen.
Would you rather have an infinite supply of energy or an infinite supply of food?
Energy, I guess. I mean, isn't food used for energy? I feel like energy, you just use it. I mean, if you want to be all scientific about it, like, isn't like energy okay. and mass like
we'll,
the same?
We'll change it. Organic energy or mechanical energy?
Now that's just confusing. What do you, organic or mechanical?
Organic, like food turns to calorie, okay. energy, and, or mechanical, meaning electricity, batteries.
Oh, good question. Let's see. Mechanical still might be better if, you know, I don't know. I feel like, you know what, I guess you could technically do without mechanical energy. Food, like organic energy would definitely be better. I think that'd be more fulfilling. You'd probably be happier with that. And like, I guess if you're going by like literal monetary costs, I think I spend more on groceries than like electricity. So I guess it's fair to have.
Yeah.
More. Lately. Yes.
Yeah. Andy, why don't you do one more question and then I'll get us to the end.
Since it's the second to last question, what would your safe word be?
Oh,
safe word.
What's your safe word?
You
already have one. I don't know.
I don't know. That the first thing that came to mind was moonlight, but that's just so stupid. But I guess if someone just blurted out moonlight, I'd be like, that would stop me in my tracks. So.
Mm.
It's definitely not something that would be said.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. Well, speaking of safe words, the next word that you say
make a break
will be safest of all or incredibly dangerous. The next question is a question we've asked all of our guests. And it is going to be both the easiest question to answer and the most difficult.
All right.
The question is, Andy or Steve?
Andy has a cool Meat Boy mug in the background, so I'm going
to
go Andy.
Fucking Meat Boy. Meat Boy has done this to me on multiple occasions at this point. Multiple occasions.
My little savior.
And your stupid little Mega Man and your stupid Angry Bird and your stupid...
This feeds my ego.
Whatever. You can't see all my stuff, but I got a lot of Gokus over here.
I have
on
things
a shelf
that are also cool that you can't see, and this is why you should like me more.
Yeah, I have meme SpongeBobs that Andy gave me.
Nice.
Anyway.
Yo, that's some good shit, dude.
They are good. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to bring us to the end of the show. Thank you, Mark, for joining us. Why don't you tell everybody how they could follow you and the game one more time?
Nice. Yeah, so if you're interested in Moonlight Pulse, I appreciate checking out the demo on Steam, wishlisting it if you like what you see. And there's a Seafloor Games Twitter account you can follow for future updates.
Awesome.
It did sound like Seafloor Games.
It did. That time it did. I thought, I was like, wait, what? Yeah. Seafloor, as in the ocean's bottom.
Yeah. We'll have those links.
Well, yeah, all the links will be in the description. As always, no problem. You just click it and go and do the thing. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Mark. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, viewers. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, please be excellent to each other.